This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Good evening and welcome to the Movie Review Show on Vectis Radio. I am Tosin, your host for the next hour, and with me are Sean.
Hello there.
And Sharon.
Hello.
This week, Sean wins the award for the local cinema resident as he tries to see everything. As we dream dreams of rap stardom and escaping New Jersey in Patty Cakes, we aim to become a new action hero while we wait for the next James Bond movie with Dominic Cooper in Stratton. And we solve a Victorian murder mystery with Bill Nighy and Daniel Mays in The Limehouse Golem. Now, Sean, you have seen all of these, right?
I have seen all of these, yep.
Yeah, as well as all the movies we spoke about last week that you hadn't seen at the time,
yep,
right?
American Made and Logan Lucky.
And Logan Lucky.
I went to see American Made on your recommendation,
yes,
as you phrase it, and I have to say I did really enjoy it. I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
A really, really good movie.
It's essentially Tom Cruise being used properly, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I guess if he works with the right directors, and I think you pointed that out last week, was if he gets a good director,
yeah,
perhaps he... That's what he needs, because I think The Mummy was it was the first time director, wasn't it? Was it the director of that movie?
Oh, good. Yes, it was. He was usually a screenwriter.
Yeah, so yeah. I guess Tom Cruise just took over, whereas maybe it was...
I would imagine he did, so, yeah, because he was pretty much the producer on that as well, so he was pretty much the director's boss.
Yeah. So that was a good movie. And Logan Lucky, I really, really enjoyed Logan Lucky. It was a really good caper movie. Yeah, it was good fun.
I love it. It's like Ocean's 11 without any of the frills. Your movie Going Prowess this week has inspired me, because you saw Detroit and you wanted to know what I thought about Detroit.
Yes.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, no.
I was going to see it today, but it was on at 5:10, which means I wouldn't be able to get here for the show. So I'm going to see it tomorrow, and then next week I can tell you what I think about Detroit. Just to pay back the thing, you recommended that, I recommended these, you went to go see them, you went and spent like essentially your whole life this week in the cinema. So I thought I need to repay that.
Thank you, Tosin. So
well done, Sean, and thank you so much for agreeing with me on Loki and American
You're
Made.
You're vindicated. Tosin.
Yeah, two good films. And to my brother, if my brother's listening, take that. You see, people think I have good film taste. Sharon, how have you been doing?
I've been okay. I haven't been as vigorous a cinema goer this week. I've seen one. I saw Stratton.
Mm-hmm.
I had a private screening.
Really?
Yes, I was the only one in there.
Oh, my word. This does not bode well.
No, and that's mainly because of the time slot. I thought, what's on at this time? I had one free evening this week.
Yeah.
And you know how you sit down and you think, about six, I think, oh, what's coming on in the next hour?
Yeah.
There was only one. So it was Stratton. I thought, well, I'm going to have to watch something before the film show. Stratton it is. I know you two gentlemen have seen Limehouse Golem, which is what I was intending to see.
Yeah, Limehouse Golem.
But it's like 2 hours long and it didn't start till 8:30 or something. I thought, yeah, I can't watch that. I'll be home before midnight.
Yeah. We have a varied selection this week.
Yeah, we've got a bit of everything.
We do have a varied selection. But the funny thing is what you said about, because I guess that's the problem now, because I think all three of us have Cineworld Unlimited cards.
Yes.
Which you pay for and you can go see as many films as you want. And so when I found that sometimes you just end up going to the cinema and you're like, right, what starts next? And then you walk in and it has to be a film that I really, really, really have like a vigorous reaction against for me to go, no, forget that, I'm just going to go home.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, there was one recently that happened with. I think for a while it was the Transformers movie, which I was just trying to avoid seeing, but it got to the point where we had to do the show and that was the only film that we hadn't reviewed. And I was like, oh, I have to go see this film now. But yeah, anyway. So let's crack on with the first movie that we're going to talk about this week, and that is Patty Cakes. Now, I think Sean and I have seen this film, right?
We have, yep.
Okay. I've seen the trailer for it. It looks quite intriguing, but I'm not into rap, so I wasn't sure if that would have a bearing on how much I would enjoy it.
Okay. Right, okay, before we go into that and tell you about whether it will be...
Teaser trailer.
Yeah, let's have a listen to the teaser trailer. For those people who do not know anything about this film, I'll tell them a little bit about what Patty Cakes is about.
How bad did you want this?
No, man.
We need a producer with fire beats.
I gotta take a picture. It's like a serial killer spy in here.
Me and JB be forming just like we Mighty Morphin. The crew is up in the cut, ha! Neospora.
Listen to me. Freaking strident.
Little sexier, Patty.
You wanna take the picture already?
Salute. Bye, honey.
Fatty cakes. Okay, all right. Okay, you might be able to tell from listening to our voices that Sean and I now have massive smiles on our faces. Because this is, Fatty Cakes is a film that, quite frankly, if you do not care about rap, you do not need to know anything about rap to go see this film.
Okay.
Because
it's reassuring.
Yeah, because the thing about it is, like, it's not a film that is, it's not really about rap. It's more of a character piece. It's about, it's your typical kind of, okay, this person lives in a rundown town somewhere in America. It's nondescript. Nothing big ever happens there. And dreams of getting out of there and going somewhere. It just so happens that this vehicle for this, for the main character who, well, the her name is Patty Dabrowski. She's a big girl. She's had a nickname Dumbo ever since high school. And people sort of like, you know, use that to sort of bully her and everything like that. They just call her Dumbo and all that kind of stuff. But she harbors dreams of, well, she raps. She raps, and that's what she wants to do with her life. She wants to become a musician, and she wants to do that through hip hop. And she's white, so obviously that's another thing that's sort of like in there, white girl trying to do hip hop and all that kind of stuff. And it's just that just happens to be her vehicle for getting out of this town, or how she sees this is how I'm going to make my way in the world. For some, you can have a film in which it's sports or anything like that, but for her, it just happens to be hip hop, which immediately brings comparisons for this film with the Eminem starring 8 Mile.
Yes. See, I did think of that because I have seen 8 Mile.
Did you enjoy 8 Mile?
I did, actually.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, I did because, as you say, it's not just about the music.
No, it really isn't just about the music. It's
finding that means of expression.
Yeah.
And that's just happened to the means that they identify with.
Yeah.
It could be country music if they'd been in the South.
Yeah,
or it could be folk dancing if you're like me.
Actually. Well, yeah, actually, now you mention it, this film is a bit like the first half of The Coal Miner's Daughter, if you've ever seen it, the Loretta Lynn story. There's a bit of it, like, you know, the sort of like poor background, all that kind of stuff. So the film kicks off, and it kicks off with, like, it looks like a hip hop video. It's like one of these big apocalyptic things that this is.
Lots of smoke and
there's green stuff everywhere, and like there's this guy who comes out and he's like, you know, I'm going to introduce you to my new disciple, it's like Killer P, and like she comes out and she's all dolled up and everything like that, and like he puts something around her neck and she starts going, and then all of a sudden she wakes up. and so it's kind of, and so the film it comes up with this whole, starts up with a dream sequence that sort of tells you this is what she dreams of, this is what she wants to be, but then it shows you the reality of her life, and like, you know, it's mundane, it's like, you know, we've got to go drive this old beat up car, trying to get a medicine for her grandmother who's ill, and her mother who is kind of like a drunk,
she's an alcoholic.
Yeah. Her mother's,
she used to be in a band herself, didn't she used to be in a band herself, and there was I guess she wanted to be a big thing as well, but maybe never quite made it.
Yeah, her mother wanted to be recorded a demo.
She recorded a demo.
A demo, and her mother, it looks like she recorded this in runabout, you know, 1980s Bon Jovi era.
Yeah.
Because like she looks at she sees the picture of her mum, and she's like, is that you? Your hair was so big. and so she recorded this demo, but obviously then she had a kid, and because she had a kid, she couldn't carry on with the music career. And so you have that, that's her home life. But then she has this best friend called Jerry, who is this Indian guy who runs a
pharmacy.
He's a pharmacy.
He works
in a pharmacy. And if you've seen the trailer for this, there's a lovely sequence where she walks into the pharmacy and he goes onto the PA and starts introducing her. She's coming down the aisle like she's coming onto a hip-hop show and giving like all the different aliases that she has, and then she grabs it and she sort of like says the same thing, she does the same thing for him, and some of the names are hilarious because he's Indian. One of his names is Deepak Shakur. Deepak Shakur, when he said that I just cracked up. I mean, I really could. And it's obviously because it's about hip-hop, and hip-hop, it seems that nowadays you just cannot separate hip-hop from bad language. There's a lot of hilarious lyrics that we cannot say on the radio.
Indeed.
There's a lot of hilarious that we cannot say on the radio, but I think it's very inventive. And one of the things that this film does, especially if you don't like hip-hop, it's pretty much poetry. And it sort of shows you, like, you know, how they put the poetry together. And I think it does quite a bit about, like, you know, the skill of writing, because of writing a good rhyme, or the skill of expressing yourself with that. And she does that really, really well. I think the music in this film I love. The writing of the songs I actually love. The way it's expressed and the things that she says about herself through the way
That's how she expresses herself. Yeah, she expresses herself through her lyrics. And there's like a, what do they call them, a face-off or something?
The rap battle.
And there's like this boy that she really fancies, and there's like, and he obviously really insults her.
It's a freestyle rap battle.
Freestyle rap battle, which
if you've seen 8 Mile, you're used to them. It's them coming up with rhymes on the spot. Like off the top of their heads, talking about each other. And I think in that scene especially, they show the difference between good rhymes and bad ones. He's part of this thing called like Doom Squad or something like that. And she really fancies him. And they're supposed to be, and they're all... Well, I think there's an undercurrent in this film of like, you know, because obviously it's all about hip hop and it's all about rap, but most of the characters who are doing it are white. And so there's an undercurrent in this film about like, you know, who's real and who's fake and who's trying to do it. And I think the Doom Squad or Goon Squad, whatever it is they're called, they're very obviously pointed as the fake people, because even there's something about the way that they rap and the way they do it. You're just kind of like, you're just pretending. None of this is real. None of this has any substance to it. And when they have that scene with the rap battle in the, it's like, you know, because in all these films you have to have the rap battle, and it's going to be in the parking lot of some convenience store and all that kind of stuff. And the way she goes about it and the way they go about it, it just kind of like highlights, yeah, she's actually got something to say.
Yeah.
They don't.
That's it.
And it seems like it's a film that is trying to, I know there's been a lot of criticism in Hollywood recently about whitewashing and about the fact that, oh, you have all these things, and this film could be accused of, all right, you have a film about somebody trying to make it in the hip-hop world, but why is it a white person? It could be accused of that. But the way they go, the fact that her best friend is an Indian guy, and then in the end they end up building this group, or this rap group, that's essentially built up of all the people who you would think are not well represented in Hollywood. So you have her, she's a white woman who is on the big side. People call her Dumbo, all that kind of stuff. You have an Indian guy who comes in. You have a black guy who is into death metal, like thrash death metal.
He is a great character.
Yeah, he's a really, character. Really good character.
Yeah, he is really good, he's called
Bastard the Antichrist.
that's his name.
That's his stage name.
He sort of turns up, doesn't he, at this gig, and he's got like a guitar, and he just repeats one word all the time.
Yeah, and people just look at him, and people just look at, like, he gives like, "You're sheep, sheep,
wake up!"
And the thing is, like, people keep looking at him, and you know, there's a thing about him looking at him like, "Hang on a second, why are you playing thrash metal? You're black," that kind of thing. And so you have that character, and then the fourth member of this group, which in the trailer,
that's where they take the photo of an album, because they do a demo themselves.
Yeah.
And that really reminds me of a N.W.A. it does. There's an album I've seen, the cassette album, where it's set for the wheelchair.
Well, is it the straight out of Compton? Straight out of Compton album. So they end up, and the fourth member is Hanan, called Nana. Hanana ends up coming, like, because she's supposed to be looking after Nana because Nana's ill and all that kind of stuff. And so they do the whole thing of how they put their music together and how they actually start finding the sound and all that. And that all goes along. So it's so much, it's almost kind of like, you know, a music biopic, but it just happens to be, this isn't a real person. And, but it has its sights set a lot lower. Like, where somebody's ideas, oh, we've got to make it, we've got to get into the charts, all these other films, these guys, it's just like, we want to be heard. They're just trying to get somebody who's going to listen to what it is that they're doing, what it is that they're producing, the music that they're playing. And it's a very, very, very feel-good film.
It is a feel-good film. What did you think of Jamie Foxx's performance?
Jamie Foxx?
Is it Jamie Foxx? Who was the guy who played the rich rapper, the one that...
Oh, no, that wasn't Jamie Foxx.
Who was that then?
That wasn't Jamie. It was, I don't know. I checked
that
it out.
Just like Jamie Foxx.
No, Sean didn't.
Sorry.
No, but maybe the same shape of head, I'll give you that.
Okay.
But no, it wasn't Jamie Foxx. I actually checked it. I'd never heard of the guy before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
You didn't like that?
I didn't like that performance. It didn't ring true to me. He didn't feel like a real person. Like, it's a rapper called Oz. They all call him OZ. He's supposed to be the godfather of rap in this world. And he's supposed to, and this is the person who she worships. She keeps having dreams where he calls her, where he calls her his disciple and all that kind of stuff. And she's just like, oh, if I can just get a chance with him, I could be mentored by him and everything like that. And obviously, I don't think it's spoiling anything to say that at some point she does manage to meet him. And the meeting is... this film is predictable. I think I'm going to go out there. This one was predictable. And
That scene we're talking about, I really liked that scene because I was about to think, this is going to be like a
Cinderella story or something like that.
Yeah, and then it totally wasn't. And it was just like, oh, yeah.
Her idol had feet of clay.
Well, the thing is, on the other hand, I expected that scene to go exactly the way that scene went.
You did, yeah?
Yeah, I expected that scene to go exactly the way that, because I feel like this film is too socially conscious to just make it a Cinderella story, because there would have been serious issues if all of a sudden, because even if it's a real world, even if you have like, you know, a guy who's like this godfather person who everybody's coming to and everything like that, and if all of a sudden he went and grabbed a white girl and went like, yay, yeah, you're going to be my disciple, and didn't have anybody else, there would be an uproar. And I feel like the film was aware of that, and so that scene went pretty much exactly how I thought that scene would go.
Well, there you go.
And it's I feel like the film is really predictable, and it's something I've been thinking about recently, is that there's good predictable and there's bad predictable. It's like we spoke about The Hitman's Bodyguard a couple of weeks ago, which is another predictable film, but there is fun in the predictability. There's another film we're going to be talking about later today in which there's a bad kind of predictable. A very bad kind of predictable. But this film, good kind of predictable. It's like, you know all the things that are going to happen. And it reminded me a bit of Real Steel.
Because, with the
punching robots.
With the robots, yeah.
Because
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, Real Steel. There's a bit in Real Steel that I think you know is going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Like, there's a bit towards the end where he takes control of the robot and he's like fighting beside the ring and the robot is mimicking his every move. I remember watching that film and going, oh my God, that's obviously going to happen. But yet when it happened, I was like, yes, do it, go for it, yeah. And I was like punching the air, because the film involves you, gets you into the characters and makes you want this thing to happen for them.
Mm.
And I think Patty Cakes totally does that. You want this thing to happen for them. You want them to be heard. You want them to go out there and actually to be listened to. And for that, I think that the film's a bit of a triumph.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. I mean, because there's many pitfalls it could have fallen into. It could have been, oh, look, it's a female 8 Mile.
Yeah.
And it's probably has a lot of similarities with a female 8 Mile. Only difference
just because it's a white rapper, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's a white rapper. Because it's a white rapper, it would have similarities with that and all that. And I think, but it has its sights set a lot slower. Like, even the final scene of this movie, like, where the sort of, I don't want to spoil it, but what ends up being the big thing that you're like, yeah, yeah, they've got what they wanted. Yeah, they've made it. It's just like its sights are set so low compared to something like 8 Mile, like when they want to get in 8 Mile or Ray or any of these other music movies. It's like, but I love it. I love the fact that it does like that. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, that scene with the, you know, when they're in the competition and
you know. Because just, they end up going to a rap competition.
I really, really like that particular song that they did.
The music is awesome.
That was so good.
Yeah, the music is, I think especially what she's saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what she's saying in rap.
Well, when she finds her mum's in the bin, and they're sort of like over. It's just, I don't know, it's just really nice.
I think that's it's brilliant.
Yeah. That's really brilliant.
It's kind of, you think about, oh, in some ways also, have you seen the Pitch Perfect movies?
Yes. I really enjoy the Pitch Perfect.
It has quite a few similarities to a Pitch Perfect movie. So you see, this is what I'm talking about. It's predictable. There's loads of things in this film that have been done in other films.
Yeah.
And yet you love it.
You still go for the moment. Come on, girls.
Yeah. And yet you love it. But I agree. I think all the music in this film, the song that her mum cut a demo with, I think is a brilliant, it's the kind of song that you listen to and you're like, was this actually a song in the 80s?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what I was going to say. Is this a song? Is this something they've done for the film?
Was this actually a song in the 80s? Because this is good. This is like, and all the music in the film, it's a kind of film where I would totally go and buy the soundtrack.
Okay.
Because the music in it is brilliant.
Yeah.
Music in it is absolutely brilliant. And I said some of the lyrics that they come up with are not safe for radio, are not family friendly, but are hilarious.
I once
they're hilarious.
It reminds me once when I was converting all my CDs and discs onto my iPod, I decided I wasn't going to have any strong language on my iPod.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to go, oh, what the heck was that in my ear?
Yeah.
So I went through my Darkness album, and from 12 tracks, I think I ended up with 3. I had to untick all of these tracks. I thought, that's not suitable for my PG iPod.
I would totally recommend it. And oh, one more thing, the performances. The performances are brilliant, yeah, especially really from good. Danielle McDonald, who plays Patty.
Okay.
Who plays Patty Dabrowski, because she carries the film. She's almost in every single scene. Yeah. Yeah,
she's pretty much
in every single scene. So she carries the film. She's a young Australian actress.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think there are a couple of times, because she's doing a New Jersey accent, there's a couple of times where the accent slips and she definitely goes Australian. Yeah. Where I was listening, I was like, oh, just went Australian there. Oh, just went Australian there. But generally speaking, she's brilliant in the role. I think the casting is awesome because you totally believe that her mum in the film could actually be her mom.
Yeah.
In real life, I think it's called Bridget Everett or something like that. She's like a comedian. She's not well known, but not to us, but she's like known in like the New York sort of like a stand up scene and everything like that. And Kathy Moriarty, who you might know as she played Jake LaMotta's wife in Raging Bull. That was like her first film film, and she's been in loads of stuff throughout the years. And she is a brilliant actress. She's one of those who you think, oh, where have they gone? Yeah, and then she pops up not looking, because usually she's quite glamorous and everything like that. Yeah, she's playing the grandmother, and you think, that's a great character.
Well, they're all good characters.
Nana is particularly brilliant. Nana is brilliant, just sort of like sitting in a wheelchair smoking the whole time.
That's it, yeah.
Coming down with like a message to just sort of cut people down like all the time. I was like, come on, let's just take the picture already.
That was great, that old guy. Oh, you used to be a lot hotter. Take the picture already.
Yeah, so Patty Cakes, would totally recommend it. Go see this film. You don't have to be into hip-hop, you don't have to be into rap, and it might actually show you what the good thing about hip-hop and rap is, like, in the way people can express themselves with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the biggest things that this film does. It really expresses, well, the hopes of its main character. I really, really think so.
Yeah,
Sean, any other thoughts?
No, just to say that it's well worth a watch, if you can put up with the bad language, and there is quite a Tosin, I'll reiterate what Tosin said, there is a fair amount.
So
it's lyrical.
I just think there's a line in there about impotent dad that just got me.
Yeah.
Oh, it had me in stitches. It had me in absolute stitches. And there will be many bits in the film where this film will have you in stitches, and it will go towards, like, you know, its joyful ending. You know it's coming, but you love it anyway.
It won some awards, didn't it? Sundance, was it?
Well, it was one of the hits of Sundance. It was because, you know, Sundance, people make the films, then they go to Sundance, and then somebody pays them a lot of money for the rights to distribute this film. And the two big winners of Sundance last year were The Big Sick, which you spoke about a couple of weeks ago, and Patty Cakes. So The Big Sick had the biggest deal at Sundance. The people paid the most to get The Big Sick. And Patty Cakes was the second highest one that people paid a lot of money for at Sundance.
Deserved to be.
It really, really does.
Yeah, just to give them that wider audience.
And to give it's a good film, deserves that wider audience. And I would say anybody listening, go out and watch Patty Cakes. You will not be disappointed. Right, okay, we're going to take a little bit of a break now, and we're going to come back and talk about our next two movies, which are Stratton and The Limehouse Golem. See you guys after the break.
Stay social and get in touch. It's /Vectis Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Hello and welcome back to the Movie Review Show on Vectis Radio, keeping you entertained and informed about the movies up until 7 o'clock, in which time Brian Curtis shall be in with the Eclectic Mix. Now, we shall continue with the movies that we are going to be talking about. So, this is the film that I haven't seen, but both you guys have seen.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, and before we talk about it, let me just see if I can figure out what this film's about just by listening to the audio trailer. Here we go.
They've landed.
Charges set.
In 4.
3. 2.
What?
They're waiting for us, Mom.
Keep your head up!
Whoever they are, knew we were coming.
Where's the chopper?
We're attempting to ID this figure. Gregor Borowski. Most dangerous man I've ever met. We need to take him down.
Sounds intense. Mm-hmm. So Sharon, you want to take the lead on this? You haven't said much so far.
Okay. So Stratton, he is a member of the Special Boat Service, the SBS, mm-hmm. which is a sister service to the SAS. A little bit of history about them, though. Both formed during the Second World War, and they sort of were so effective that they were made permanent part of the British Armed Forces, and then they've then gone on, and they were the precursor to people like the Navy SEALs and other these elite forces. They were the sort of ahead of their game. So, but they're the Special Boat Service. They're this ultra fighting machine that's allied with the Navy.
Yep.
And so the film starts with this SBS team going into this oil plant in Iran, sneaking under the lines because there's rumours, or they've had intelligence, that there's chemical weapons there.
Okay.
And so they get there, and pretty soon things begin to go wrong. It's almost as if their intelligence has been blown, or they've been given some misinformation.
Yep.
So by the time they actually get into the site, the chemical weapons have already been taken by another organisation, presumably an aggressive terrorist type organisation.
Yep.
So you have your instant firefight, and then as the film progresses, it's about this trying to track down where chemical weapons have gone and where they intend to deploy them. Because as the story unfolds, you find out about this Borowski, who is used to be a former double agent. He was like a Russian agent who is then... They found out he was a double agent.
Okay.
And so then they thought he was dead, but he'd gone undercover.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's emerged to get his revenge against the world that has done him wrong.
Oh,
as it happens in these
things. So far sounds like the plot of about half a dozen Bond films.
Yeah, that's it. The main character is called Stratton, and he's an officer in the SBS. And you see most of the film is played through. He's sort of front and centre. He is like a lesser James Bond type character without the swagger, but he's got this sort of backstory and he's got this sort of side thing where he lives on a riverboat, and he's got this old salty old sea dog played by Derek Dacobi, who is like his father figure.
Yeah.
And so you've got like this, you see his glimpse into his private life, and then you see him at work, and then the two sort of blend. Okay. So I thought there's lots to like about this film, but there's also some drawbacks about this film that I'll be quite open about.
Sean?
But Sean, you chip in there, because
we may not
have the same drawbacks or reservations.
Well, the opening scene, like you say, where they've obviously been betrayed, it's almost like a setup. It was a setup. So although the chemicals have gone, it's also a setup, because I think he actually says, oh, they were waiting for us, and they have to go a different route to try and escape.
Yeah.
And it's almost, and they're lucky, really, aren't they? One of them. And there's a Navy SEAL that is on that first operation with him, and he actually gets
killed.
Yeah, he gets killed.
I mean, with the kind of film that you guys are talking about, I think it's pretty obvious that someone's going to get killed.
Yeah. And then this other Navy SEAL turns up to work with him on the case.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh.
Let me guess, he and Stratton's out for revenge on the people who killed his mate in the beginning.
Not really. No.
He's the one who's got more restraint. He's like saying, I know what your desire is to seek revenge, but put the operation first.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because that's it, because it's another Navy SEAL, isn't it? And he's like, he asks someone, he says, what's Stratton like? And then he asks, and so he's very wary of him because he let his mate get killed, or he thinks. His original idea were, it was his fault that his mate died. So you've got that relationship running through
Stratton's like a cool head, and he's like a safe pair of hands. So if you have a dangerous mission, he's reliable. He'll get the job done without taking risks or being too flash.
Yeah. Oh, that's different.
Yeah, it was. Actually, the head of MI, is it MI5 or MI6? MI6. The head of MI, I didn't like her to start with. I thought, she doesn't quite work. But towards the end of the film,
She bedded into a role better.
She bedded into a role better.
That's Connie Nielsen plays the head of MI6. And I think her first scene when you meet her was awful.
Awful, yeah, agreed.
It was almost like I didn't believe her at all.
Yeah.
I didn't believe that she was English, for a start. I didn't believe that she was in intelligence, and I just certainly didn't believe that she was had been like 30 years in the field and then had moved into like a desk job. You know, it's just like no.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
And just the way she was speaking, it was almost like she'd had just come out of elocution lessons. Like, this is how someone who's been like privately educated, this is how someone would speak. And even just there was no rhythm to her speech. Like, it wasn't natural. It just to me, it was just like, this, you've been told, this is how someone like this speaks, and you're trying to copy that pattern of speech, and it just doesn't work at all. But she does get better. But every now and then I think, yeah, that word, I can see you try to over-enunciate to make it sound like you were upper-class British
Danish,
woman.
Yeah.
But when I first saw her, I was just like, get off.
I was like that. I was the same. I was like, oh, my goodness me.
Oh, my God, the seat's that bad.
It is. It's excruciating, because she's like running along and she's jogging, and you're thinking, hey, when you first, the first word she says, you think, what?
Have you ever seen a program called Dark Matter?
No, I haven't.
No. Oh, well, okay. Well, if it's like the android. There's a female android on this Dark Matter, and it was almost like she was an android.
She wasn't like a real.
It wasn't that natural rhythm of speech or of inflection. It didn't feel natural or real at all.
Maybe you guys just didn't realize you're watching an undercover sci-fi movie.
She was a replicant or some such thing. But in many ways, when I was watching the film, it reminded me a little bit of Strike Back and some aspects of Spooks.
Well, it is. That's the thing. Everything I've heard about this film sounds like it's because, you know, he had the Andy McNab who wrote Bravo 2-0.
Did write the original Strike Back, didn't he? The first series.
And all of a sudden they've the Sky took on decided making all these series on Strike Back and stuff like that, which is all about a whole bunch of SAS guys being hard and going off and going around the world
the
and
first
being
series,
hard.
Yeah, I watched the others.
I've not seen it, so
but
I couldn't.
They became more raunchy and less realistic as they went on. But they became less about the mission and more about, hey, look at my hot bod, and that a little goes a long way, I think, with hey, look at my hot bod type acting.
And the thing with Stratton is that for it seems like it's just like someone taking It seems like a blatant attempt to start a franchise.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Obviously left, you know, the end of the film leaves you that way. Or could this be a new...
Yeah, I think even from the beginning, once I heard, it's based on a book, and not just a book, but it's a series of books about this Stratton character. And it sounds like, you said sub-James Bond. To me, it sounds like it's a... I said in the intro.
It's like a cross between Bourne and Bond, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Which you have a bit nowadays. Yeah. I mean, I know earlier this year, Rumi Rapace was in a film called Unlocked.
Unlocked.
Yeah, she was in a film called Unlocked.
I really liked that movie.
You did?
Yeah, very much. You didn't, obviously.
No, it was for me, it was a 3 out of 5. A 3 out of 5. Yeah. There were things about it that worked, and there were things about it that you were just kind of like, you're trying a bit too hard to make a female cross between Bourne and Bond.
Yeah, I quite like that.
Yeah,
I don't know whether our expectations are different, though, when we watch something, but I was watching this and thinking, to me, it felt more like it would have suited better as a television thing.
Yeah.
And maybe stretched it to like a 2 hour or 4 hour thing, but as an hour, 1 hour and a half, it didn't feel very cinematic to me. That was one of my sort of criticisms. It felt like it was a bit
reminded
more
very much of that 80s series
television.
The Professionals. Remember that? Do 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 do.
The thing is, like, everything you guys are saying is confirming what I thought. I mean, it sounds like it's
a good solid piece of filmmaking. I mean,
they do
the job well.
That's good.
I mean, there's nothing when you go, oh, please get off,
apart from her accent
and maybe the motorboat scene.
Oh, yeah, when they're running down the Thames.
Yeah,
because sometimes you think, they have these scenes where there's, like, chasing terrorism down the Thames, and you think, there's no... Where's the British Transport Police? If you have people sort of shooting guns everywhere, you think there's going to draw some attention.
So you're saying like, that could work in an American city, but not in London.
No, not especially in our modern climate. You know, there's practically a police officer on every corner in London, isn't there now?
Mm.
There's a lot. They've certainly beefed up the Met.
Yeah.
And so you get the feeling that this sort of thing wouldn't happen without, you know, 30 police officers going, what's going on, pal?
Yeah.
You see, okay, now this is the funny thing that I work, because, you know, whenever we see an American film, obviously it's, unless you've been to the city or anything like that, it's an alien world, and if your only idea about America was from movies, you think that, like, you know, there were car chases every day
and gunfights all the time,
but once it's somewhere that we recognize, like London, you know, we start going, start picking holes in it left, right, and center. I wonder whether Americans do the same thing. I wonder whether people sit there and watch like a film that's set in New York and go,
Oh, come on!
The thing is, what always amazes me in certain car chases is they go down all these roads and they're pretty blind. They don't know what's down there. There's never any bollards, or they never seem to take a dead-end turn in, mm-hmm. and, you know, or maybe they do, but then they drive through a market. They never get caught up in traffic, you know, and to me it's, you know, a car chase.
Have a cyclist cut them up. No, they're just...
I mean, I'm not a big fan of car chases, except in Baby Driver, because that's good. And what you were saying about the police turning up, they do actually turn up. Quite a lot of the things when they're coming on, they
well in Baby Driver, in Baby Driver, driving. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
In Baby Driver, the police do turn up quite quickly, in effect, really, which is why he has to get away. Whereas sometimes his chases go on forever. I think the worst car chase was in that last Bourne movie.
Yeah, it went on for
like 3 hours, and it hit so many things and went over so many humps, and it was just like, come on.
If that sort of thing comes on when I'm at home, I get my book out and I start reading.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly do. Yeah. I think I can't be able to turn it off. I'll see how far this goes, but I'm going to read.
It's like these movies, everybody tries to outdo a car chase. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, let's see how we could do this.
All right, okay, cool. So
back to Stratton.
Yeah, okay, back to Stratton, because as I was saying, everything that you guys have said, like, it sounds like it's an attempt to make a British version, which means immediately less money than an American big movie, so like they'll have to pare down a lot of the stunts and all that. And what you said about it will feel a little bit like a TV show, I expected that. I expected it to be like some sort of a bit, maybe a little bit better than a Strike Back, but maybe not. When you said The Professionals, I was like,
you know the program.
I know the program. And when you said The Professionals, it really does make me, I expected that was the kind of thing we're going to get from Stratton. But you guys are the ones who've actually seen it. I'm just going off some prejudices. So, how many stars would you give it?
I would say, for me, it started off, I would give it a 3.
Okay.
I would say it just crept up to 3 for me. There's some bits I was thinking, is it 2.5? Is it like midway? But I'll probably just give it 3 because it was entertaining. It had a good story. I liked the characters. I thought they were quite well developed.
Mm-hmm.
The bad guy was really obvious. I mean, as soon as the certain actor appeared, you think, yeah, you're the spy. You're the double agent. So there was an element of predictability about it.
Yeah, there was big predictive. You knew straight away, really.
Yeah, so I would give it to me, it just... pipped to 3.
Okay, so is this Sean?
Yeah, I would probably say I would probably reiterate the same. I'd give it a 3. It's watchable. It's not a disaster by any way.
No, I've seen much worse films.
So yeah, it's okay. There's a few bits that I think are a bit like, oh, come on. But
so you're saying that pretty much if you read through the list of the read through the cast list, we can say, oh, that's a bad guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know it's got Dominic Cooper, Stratton, Connie Nielsen as the head of MI5, and no, this one hasn't got Ben Kingsley in it, has it?
No, it's got Dirk Jacobi as the salty old sea dog.
Yeah, he's a great cat, but he's nice really good, actually. It's not in it for particular.
No, and he doesn't just play it for laughs. You can see this. Again, you feel that there's a backstory to these characters, which is quite good.
They
exist beyond just the scene you see them in, because some films you think... You just go and sit in a room, don't you, after this scene, because you don't actually have a life.
You just go there and power down.
Yeah.
You just go power down until the next scene, and you're like,
Ooh, that's something to say.
All right, okay, cool. So 3 out of 5 for Stratton. And now we go into a final film of this week, which is The Limehouse Golem. Yeah. Okay. Sean, keep it under wraps, all right? Let's play this and then we can set you loose. All right, The Limehouse Golem. Limehouse Golem. Here's a little bit of a taste of what this film's about.
I'm Inspector Kildare of Scotland Yard. I'm investigating a series of deaths. They're calling them the Limehouse Golem Murders.
How many more people have to die before the golem is caught?
Keep my secret, and I'll keep yours. The golem is still at large. Wasting my time could cost lives.
I believe the golem is after me.
I shall stop this. I guarantee it.
We all wear pantomime masks, do we not?
It sounds awesome, doesn't it? And okay,
like a Victorian whodunit with a bit of Jack the Ripper thrown in, but not because, you know,
Well, it's set in 1880, which
also just bit before.
It's eight years before Jack the Ripper happened. It's set in 1880. It's set in Limehouse in London, so they've gone a little bit like, you know, a little bit more eastish in London than from where Jack the Ripper was, and everything about this film, as you said, it sounds all right. It sounds good. It sounds intriguing, and it has a good setup. It has Bill Nighy playing like this sort of like Bill Nighy apparently taking over a role that Alan Rickman was supposed to have.
Yes, I had heard that he was supposed to be in it.
It was supposed to be Alan Rickman, but then he died. And then Bill Nighy sort of like came in and took over the role. And it has all these things that you think, oh my God, the setup is there. It's good. It's a Victorian murder mystery. And then, Sean, what happens?
I hear a butt coming for this.
A butt. Yeah, well, what should we say?
It should be good, but...
When I saw the trailer, I thought, oh, this looks quite interesting. This looks like a Victorian drama.
Yeah.
Okay. I looked at reviews, funnily enough, and it's sort of 50-50 split. There's as many bad reviews as there is good reviews, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to come down on the side of the bad reviews.
Yeah.
Purely because, to me, well, everything about it was dull, it was boring, the sets were just horrendous. They were horrendous. They had modern brassiere of people, you know, the people... I just really, 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 really disliked this movie. And it was so predictable as well. You just knew, you thought, oh, no, you know what's happened straight away. Well, I think even the performance, you know. Well, I don't know what it wanted to be. Did it want to be a comedy? Did it want to be a mystery? Did it want to be something like Cabaret or, you know, Chicago or something like that?
But I was not expecting any of those comparisons.
Okay, cool. So...
I was expecting something a bit gothic.
No, the thing is, I totally agree with you, Sean. I totally agree with you.
It really reminded me of, what's that film, Moulin Rouge. Some bits reminded me of Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, some bits of it are like Moulin Rouge. Some bits of it are, but the thing is...
Because there's Douglas Booth. Does he like play like some sort of...
He plays a character called Dan Leno, which I think he was actually a real...
A female impersonator type.
Yeah, I think he was actually a real character. He was a real character in, dance hall. He was a dance hall... actor and all that kind of stuff, really popular around about that time. And they put things like, they bring in Karl Marx. Yeah. Karl Marx is one of the suspects in this thing. They expect him to be the Limehouse Golem. They bring in a guy called Dan Giddens, Gissen, who was actually apparently a real life. So they bring this, it's supposed to be like some historical fiction kind of thing. And they bring them in and they have the makings of a good film. They really do. The way they set it up at the beginning, like, okay, they've been these grisly murders. Great, we're with you. We know exactly what we have when it's going to be like a Victorian serial killer chase.
I was thinking something like a gothic thriller type.
Exactly,
thing.
Exactly.
And that's what you expect.
And the Karl Marx scene and the Gissing scene. You know,
That I have to admit, that did annoy me. So I'll explain. So you have this whole thing where they bring in Bill Nighy as this Inspector Kildare of Scotland Yard, who has been kept back in his career because of. There's a line where they go, there's rumours that he's not the Marion type.
Okay.
Yeah. Essentially. So like...
You know what that means.
Yeah, so you have the setup that is like a good character. A good character, like there's a piece of a redemption thing going on in there. But as the film goes on, it just smacks. It smacks of there was a really good script that was exploring all these sort of different issues that like, you know, what was it like to be... Like, you know, not the Marion type in Victorian London. What was it like to be a female performer in Victorian London? That kind of stuff. What was it like to be a child who had to work on the docks? And you have these things in there that they kind of bring up and then they totally trash. It stinks of something where they had a good script and the director didn't understand what they were trying to do. And then tries to do this whole other thing. Yeah. And so they have this, and even the structure of the film, the way they go about it, makes it blitheringly obvious who the Limehouse Golem is. Like, 20 minutes into the film, you know who the Limehouse Golem is. But the way they make the film, they make it seem like, oh no, we pulled the wool over your eyes. And the way they finally do the reveal, like an hour later, after you've known for an hour, who the Limehouse Golem is. You know for an hour where it's going. And when they finally do the reveal, they're trying to make it go like, ooh, surprise! You didn't expect this, did you? We're like, we totally expected that. You telegraphed that from 20 minutes into the film. It was obvious that that was the bad guy. And it's supposed to be a mystery. And when you have taken away, I was talking about the bad kind of predictable. This film is the bad kind of predictable. Okay. It's like,
you're putting me off, chaps, I have to say.
I honestly don't think it's worth your time.
Okay.
I mean, I honestly think it's a waste of a good cast. I mean, Douglas Booth does something different because he usually plays the posh boy.
Posh boy, with beautiful lips.
Yeah, he usually plays the posh boy. He does something different with this. I think his accent is a bit annoying. And so they have this whole thing where the golem has kept this diary. And even the way they find the diary is a total... Yeah. You're like, wait a second. What the heck? How did you find that? That was not police luck. That was the script putting that there in front of you.
Yeah.
So it was just like even the way they find it. And then they have this bit where they're reading through the diary, and as they're reading through the diary, like, you know, the inspector is imagining the different suspects being it. And that's the bit Sean was talking about. Where they have this horrible. Of modulated voice that they put on, where they go, "And I am the Limehouse Golem, and I am going to do my performance tonight, and I am going to find the first person who's going to get killed." And it's just so...
Yoda meets Kermit or something. Yeah.
Kind of is.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's kind of like, in Scream, where the guy just changes his voice when he's talking on the phone. It's a bit like that. And the way they do it, like, the way they go through it, you're kind of going... hang on, if you're doing it this way, it just kills all the suspense. Mm-hmm. It makes it annoying. It makes you know, like, okay, this is where it's going. This is what's going to happen. And what Sean was saying, are you trying to be gory? Are you trying to... And there's some bits. I mean, I understand if you have a budget. But there's some things. Like and when you talk about good cast being wasted, Eddie Marsan's in this film. He's
extraordinary most of the time.
Yeah, he is extraordinary most of the time. But... He plays a bald character, and the first time he shows up, it is so obvious that he's wearing a skull cap. It is so obvious. You can see the join. You can see the join where he reaches his forehead. There's a bit where he turns his head to the back, and he bends his back, and the folds at the back of his neck look like rubber. And it's so obvious that this guy did not shave his head for this role. He was wearing a skull cap. And... wear a skull cap, no problem. For a while, I was actually thinking, because his character in the film is like an actor, I was thinking, well, his character must have had... maybe his character is wearing a skull cap on stage, and that's what... But no, he's supposed to be bald. And it's just... it's... and even that I could... that I could...
I thought he looked like a Ferengi from Star Trek. That's how I would say.
Yeah. Oh, Chris Latinum. Anyone?
The thing is, like, that I could... budgetary constraints, I can forgive. What I can forgive is not knowing what story you're trying to tell. Mm. And wasting a brilliant cast like that. Because it has all this... I think Olivia Cook, she plays... there's a whole subplot about a woman who is married to one of the... suspects who dies just before the investigation starts. And so I think she's good with what she's given. What she's given is rubbish. I think they're all good in the roles. I feel like there's another film or a TV series that could have been made with someone who understood the material and knew what they were doing with it. But the way it does, you're just sitting down there, seriously, you're waiting for this film to end. Mm. You're waiting for this film to end. And even when they reveal who the person is that you've known for an hour.
By that point, you're a bit like, yeah, whatever.
And the film goes on for another 10, 15 minutes.
also back to this, I'm really funny with sets. I always look, because, you know, I mean, a bit of construction there. And to me, a lot of the streets of London are just, you can see they've sort of been, you know, made, manufactured, I think, a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I compared it to that Spider-Man, what, the late Spider-Man film with Times Square, and it's like, oh, come on.
The Amazing Spider-Man movies. And also what they do with the characters as well, like the Bill Nye character, they have the beginnings of a very interesting character. They give they give him Daniel Mays as a sort of like a constable to be his assistant, and there's beginnings of an interesting relationship there, and then they destroy it. Destroy it. Like he becomes an idiot, like 15 minutes after he's supposed to be the most brilliant mind in all of Scotland Yard, he just becomes a total idiot he does so many things that you're like, why the heck are you doing that?
Mm.
So on that note, I'll give this film, I don't know, two.
Two, yeah.
By tomorrow it might be one.
That's stretching it. Stretching it to
two.
A
out of five.
Yeah.
Because I like some of the costumes. I like the dancehall sequences and all that. But anyway, that's it from us. We are now going to hand you over to Speedway, where Humpty and Shania are going to take you through the Racist for tonight. So thank you for joining us on the Vectis Radio Movie Review Show. Thank you, Sean.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Sharon.
Goodbye.
And we will see you guys next week. Goodbye.
www.vectisradio.com.